The Duly Noted Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today. And by Vistar Credit Union, with locations across Gator Country. Visit VistarCU.org. And the Humidor, going the distance for fine cigars.
This is Duly Noted, everything Florida Gators, with your host, Pat Duly.
Okay, welcome in to another edition of the Duly Noted podcast. Appreciate everybody for clicking on. Later on the show, we're going to have Josh Vital on, who wrote a really good story about how the SEC is foul city in college basketball. More fouls, way more fouls than any other conference. And I don't think there's an explanation for it, except that perhaps that directive is coming from the league. They want fouls called. And I don't know. I think that's something I'm going to look into when I go to Nashville next week. Is there a directive, or are you saying call everything, don't let anybody get away with anything? But anyway, that's for a little bit later in the show, and I'm going to give you my feelings about block charge, which I have been thinking about for a long time, last couple of years, and I think I have the answer, but nobody wants to hear it. Now, we will start out by talking about football practice, which is going to begin in a couple of weeks, obviously Monday of this coming up week. Today's Wednesday. Monday, we're having a press conference with Dan Mullen. We'll talk to him about things. And then they start the following Monday. Robbie and I have put together, and we worked on it today, three different videos talking about what to expect from Florida in the spring. Those will start posting on March 15th. So be on the lookout for those. And look, a lot of it's pretty obvious. And, you know, if you ask me what Florida has to do in the spring, I would tell you the two most important things are, one, stay healthy, and two, get better. I mean, it's not that complicated a process, but you know, you're talking about a team that has incredible high expectations, higher than they've been here in a long time. When's the last time? Look, I think there were people last year who, because if you remember when Florida was playing in the Peach Bowl, they go, we want to be back here next year. Yeah, it's like, yeah, okay, that's good. It's good that you have that as a goal. But I didn't expect Florida to get to be a playoff team. This year, there is that level of expectation, and it's not just the players and the coaches and maybe overly optimistic fans. There's a lot of people that think Florida can be a playoff team. So you got to get through the spring and continue to get better. You know, you see what Nick Savage, the old Urban Meyer used to say. He wasn't old. I mean, it was an old saying that Urban Meyer used to have. I'll know what kind of team I have when Mickey Marotti gives it to me, in August. But you'll already know a little bit about what he's done with them in just, what are we talking about, 2 months? Getting them bigger. And we've seen the Zachary Carter videos or pictures. So, look, there is no doubt in my mind this team is physically going to be ready, and that they'll physically, I think, be a little bit better than last year. More numbers, more players, more competition. Then you have to do the other thing, which is not get hurt by the transfer portal. Now, I will say this. You can lose 8 guys from a team. Florida last year lost 10, but one of them was a former walk-on. So it wasn't like – and some of those guys played well where they went. Kylan Johnson at Pitt was pretty good. But it wasn't like they lost anybody that really was a starter. Kylan Johnson would be the one you could make an argument about. But in the end, if guys want to go, the opportunity's there for them. That's the way it's set up now, certainly these days. Florida has certainly enjoyed the transfer portal and got more impact players than they've lost. The only place where it really hurt you and where it hurt Florida last year is the roster was already – there were already issues with it because of some other things that had happened, and they didn't get 3 guys in academically, two academically and one on a visa thing. I still don't understand what's going on with that thing. But the bottom line is, all of a sudden, when you get a bunch of injuries, you know, David Reese III gets hurt before the season starts or before practice even starts. And a bunch of other guys get hurt different times. CJ was out for a while and obviously the Zuniga injury and Grenard, all that stuff happens and you don't have the depth because you don't have enough players. You don't have the bodies. So I think even if they get – you lose a few guys, you're going to lose some guys. Look, a running back, if they get this kid Evans running back, and, you know, they're probably going to have a guy leave now at that position. I wouldn't blame them. They probably aren't going to play, especially if Lingard gets eligible, which we don't even know what's going to happen with the NCAA. The NCAA could easily decide – in August, which is a lot of people think is going to happen, that, hey, you can transfer once without sitting out. So that would be Lingard's 1 year of not sitting out. And so he could play. So who knows what's going to happen there. But look, you're going to lose some guys. There's always attrition. I think that's why you see Florida so close to the 85 number. I think they're at 84. Usually you don't get that close because you want to leave some room for walk-ons or strange things that could happen in August. And all of a sudden, you know, this guy who is a really good player and he gets in a situation where he wants to get out. You want to have openings. Nobody really wants to have 85 all the time. So Florida's close to the number, though, because of all the things that happen. And I think they're kind of expecting some guys to leave. And this is the thing that will happen in the spring. By the end of the spring, the guys who want to leave are going to know they need to go. They know they're not going to play very much, and you can't blame them. You want to play. I get it. That's why Kyle Trask's story is so great. So if Florida gets through the spring, just keep getting better. Get better, stronger. Everybody should pretty much, except for the freshmen, everybody should have a pretty good idea of what's expected of them. That's what you need to do. Get through the spring healthy, get better, go on to the summer conditioning. And it's going to be a hot one. All right, so that's my take on football. And obviously we're going to talk a lot of football as we get through spring. Don't forget, we continue with these podcasts right up through the end of the spring game, which they finally have set. And the time of a 1 o'clock, which is beautiful. As you know, 1 o'clocks are great for me. But so we'll run right through the spring game, and then take a little bit of time off and come back. But we'll continue to do a bunch of things. We got some ideas of some cool things to do. What we have to do right now, as we always do right at this time, is take a break. We'll take that break. We'll come back and we're going to talk about Gator baseball and, of course, Florida basketball game tonight against Georgia. I'll give you my thoughts on that again. Look, guys, you know the drill. If you didn't get on the podcast till Thursday, and I understand people are busy and sometimes we don't get it up in time. I'm not going to talk. That's why I'm not going to talk a lot about Georgia, because for a lot of you, Georgia will have happened. But I will talk a little bit about it. All right, let's take a break, come back with more. Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com.
At Vistar, we believe in better, especially in helping build a better financial future for our members. So we've reviewed our offerings from the ground up. We've lowered or eliminated over half our fees and enhanced our already competitive rates, saving members more than $1 million this year, in addition to the millions we save them every year. If you believe that saving money is better, join Vistar. We never forget that it's your money. All loans subject to approval, insured by NCUA.
Tailgates and Gator Wins call for the best cigars available from around the world. Pick your sticks today and save at the Florida family-owned site, thehumidor.com. Get free shipping on every cigar order. Find boxes from the biggest brands, samplers hand-selected by top tobacconists, or pick your own single sticks. Thehumidor.com, going the distance for fine cigars. Okay, so let me start out this segment by talking about Gator baseball. 12-0, they played tonight. if you're listening to this Thursday, they played last night. I feel pretty good about them getting to 13-0, but it's baseball. You never know what can happen in baseball. I think more than any other sport. To me, the two most unpredictable sports for single, just a single event, I don't want to say game, but are golf and baseball. Because in golf, you can be the best player in the world. You can be great and go out and have a bad day, you know, hit in the water and shoot 78. And in terms of NCAAs, I know last year's Florida team or the year before? They just totally fell out on the last day, fell apart. And those things can happen, and you can't predict it. In baseball, you can predict whether a team's going to be great, good, mediocre, whatever they are. You can't predict the outcome of one game, one single game. It's baseball. It always cracks me up when I see a headline on ESPN that but like Orioles upset Yankees. There's no upsets in baseball. Yeah, if you bet it, maybe it was an upset. But even the worst teams are going to win like 65 games. So that's why baseball to me is a very unpredictable. And that's why it's very impressive to go 12-0 and set the school record or right out of the chute. And again, don't forget there was three games against Miami and three games against a Troy team that if they could field, and they'll get better at that, you would think, as the season goes on. But they can hit. They can rake, man. I loved watching that team play, and they were good. But they had issues with fielding the baseball. And then the last game, again, Florida's throwing Hunter Barco at you. And, you know, that's the thing. That's where Florida's going to have a major advantage when we get to SEC play, which I believe is next week. Where their advantage will be is most days – most teams, where you go, and the SEC is great because it's the best league by far, but you're still getting the number three guy. Florida's number three guy might be the best pitcher on the team. Now, I don't know if he's the best pitcher. He's the best thrower, probably. I don't know if he's the best pitcher yet, but he'll learn as we go forward. So it's been fun. I was out there for a couple games and looking forward to be out there. I'll have the Friday night game when Florida plays USF. And hopefully continue. Look, they aren't going undefeated. We know that. That's the one thing we know. You know, I don't even know what the team with the best, with the fewest number of losses in the regular season in Florida history is, but it's probably like, I want to say 14 or so, somewhere in that range. You know, can you get there? I mean, this league is really good. You look at the teams ranked in the top of the poll. I mean, just the top of the poll. And they're all through the poll. So, but this is a good Florida team. It's got a lot of good elements, things I like about it. I think this is a team that's thicker. You know, you can just see that their work of the offseason paid off. They're stronger. They're hitting the ball better. You know, Judd Fabian. I love watching Judd Fabian play. And so we'll see what happens going forward. Basketball-wise, look, Saturday was a disaster that they almost averted. You know, being destroyed down 17 for the sixth time in SEC plays, that makes no sense. No sense at all. This team is no – if I had told you before the season that once we get into SEC play, this Florida basketball team, without injury problems, okay, is going to get down by 17 points six times in conference play, you'd have thought I was crazy, right? Now, we all – again, I'm not going to – it's the same old story. I don't want to continue the same path, but we all overrated this team. We had never seen Scotty Lewis play. We'd never seen my daughter had seen Trey Mann play, but I'd never seen him play. And those guys, but here's one thing I will say. And I know the Fire Mike White hive is all over the place and they're buzzing. It's again, I'm not going to tell you again not to waste your breath. It's wasting my breath to tell you not to waste your breath. But I was thinking about this the other day. All right, has Trey Mann gotten better as the season's gone on? Yeah, he has. Has Scotty Lewis? Yeah, definitely. No question he's gotten better as the season's gone on. Let's just not talk about the last game, but as the season's gone on. Is Keontae Johnson better than he was last year? Yeah. Is Andrew Nembhard better than he was last year? I think he is. I don't know that we all always see it in terms of basic numbers, but I think he is. So guys are getting better. It's not like they're not getting better. But I think expectations and the incredible hunger of Gator fans, of what I've talked about before, which is to get back to where they once were. Now, I would never call Florida a blue blood basketball program. It's not. I mean, when you reduce capacity on your arena and still can't fill it up for most games, you're not a blue blood, okay? But under Billy Donovan, they got to a high level, winning back-to-back national championships, getting to another Final Four 7 years later. And Mike White certainly has his critics because they don't like the style of ball they play. They don't like – there's a million things they don't like. Everybody's got an answer. Everybody's a better coach. Everybody has been to all the practices this year and watches hours and hours of tape. Everybody. Apparently, because that's what I keep getting, is how much smarter you guys all are than Mike White and his staff. All that said, I get the criticism because, and again, I feel like a broken record. Like I'm making the same statements I was making last week. I get it. I get why you're upset. I get why you can't believe your team could get down. Look, losing is not the shame. Losing to Tennessee, we all know what happened last night with Tennessee. Losing to Tennessee is not at Tennessee where there's 20,000 people and you never play well there. There's no shame in that. But being down 17 there, it's shameful. Now, Tennessee turns around and they're down 17 last night and they come back and beat Kentucky on senior night. Now, I will say this. I got to admit, I turned it off. I said, this game's over. Flipped it over to something else. Was watching some. I watched a little bit of basketball last night, but I wish I'd watched, man. There is nothing better than watching Kentucky fans watch a game unravel at home. It really is a guilty pleasure of mine. So I feel bad, and I'm sure the SEC Network is going to reshow that game at some point, and I'll just watch the last, 10 minutes or so. But here's what is amazing to me, and we talked about this a little bit last week. Hell, I don't really get the net rankings. I don't understand, and we talked to Gary Parrish about it, that they feel like they're still flawed, but they're better than what they had. But I don't know how Florida loses at Tennessee and drops one spot in the net rankings. Kentucky loses at home to Tennessee and drops seven spots in the net rankings. Now, this is what the explanation for it that somebody would give you is that's probably a quad three loss because you're at home. It might be a quad two loss. It's right there on the bubble of that. Whereas Florida losing to Tennessee was a quad one loss because the game was in Knoxville. All this stuff gets complicated, I know. But, right now we're in a situation where on the net rankings, Washington's ahead of UCLA. Washington, you know where they are in the Pac-12? Last. You know where UCLA is? First. Washington's ahead of them. And I don't know if we're going to see some – criticism, and maybe this isn't the answer either. But again, when you're counting on here's the other thing. I don't know. We don't know how much the committee is going to take it. If the committee takes it into that's the only thing they go by, obviously, then you're going to see the top however many teams didn't win conference champions that are the at-large teams. But you gotta have some eye tests. You gotta look at some of the bigger wins, and you gotta look at the record on the road. Florida's is not great. Now, where Florida's getting saved is their 4-1 record in neutral site games. Overall, Florida's 7-8 away from the O-Dome, and that's not a great record. But It may be enough to get him in. Look, I believe, and again, if you're watching this Thursday, you already know what happened, or listening this Thursday, I believe that if Florida beats Georgia, they're in the tournament. They're set. It's a huge game for Florida. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on it because I know a lot of you are going to be watching this Thursday, and you may be cursing right now. You may be cursing me. I told you, Dooley, you don't know what you're talking about, and the Gators stink, and I'm tired of Mike White. Or you may say, yeah, they won, we're in the tournament. It'll be a lot of fun. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happened there. Meanwhile, around the SEC, Mississippi State, done. Alabama, done. This league has, like I talked about, the Coral Snakes. You know, every team in this conference is good enough to beat you. They're not good enough to win. Now, that may sound like the dumbest thing I've ever said, but every team in this conference is good enough to beat you. But they're not going to win a lot of games. They're not going to win on a regular basis. They're going to have the same problems. And that's where the league has just totally screwed itself up, because nobody's there's Kentucky, which is really good, and then, of course, they lose last night. But Kentucky's really good. Auburn, I wouldn't count on them anywhere but at Auburn. LSU has been struggling. Those are your top three teams, right? Florida, we all know how we feel about that. Mississippi State and South Carolina are tied for fifth, right? Going into the weekend, or they may be tied for fourth. Depends on what happened with Florida last night or tonight or last night. And Mississippi State, gosh, of course you wouldn't trust them. That to me is like, if I was talking about the worst coaching job, I might go Ben Hallen. I think he's done a terrible job with that team. I think he has a great team there. And that team came in here and spanked Florida, and I went, man, they are really talented. Now I think they played their way out of the tournament. Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. Come on, man. At home? Come on, man. Nice try. So it's going to be four, likely, that get in from the SEC. You got Auburn's 28 near net, LSU's 30. Florida right now at 34. Going into the Georgia game. And Tennessee, even though one thing that helps some of the other teams in the conference is Tennessee now is up to 57 in their net ranking because they're playing better at the end of the year. And your loss or your win against Tennessee is going to look better. But South Carolina, they're still at 61. They're not getting in. They're going to have to win the tournament. I don't know. If they won their last game, who do they have? I think it's Vandy, right? For their last game of the season, which, look, again, the Coral Snakes are there. But if they win that game and then finish fourth in the league, and I've told you before, how you finish in the league doesn't matter to the committee, but that would get them a bye. They'd almost be better off not getting a bye. They would be better off not getting a bye and having to win. Like, if you could win three games and get to the final and lose to Kentucky, you'd have a chance of getting in. But other than that, I mean, South Carolina, I like their team a lot. I like when I watch them play, but no. That's the only answer I have. No. So this league, after getting 15 teams, was that right? 15, I believe, in the last 2 years, probably only going to get four in this year. All right, we are going to take a break. We are going to bring on Josh Vitale from the Montgomery Advertiser to talk a little bit about a piece that he wrote, and also a little bit. We'll sneak in an Auburn football question as well. You're listening to the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com. Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or visit Zaxby's.com. Okay, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast. Appreciate our next guest for coming on, Josh Vitale of the Montgomery Advertiser. And we're bunkmates now. I mean, we're both in the same organization, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's hard to tell for sure who works where and who works for who. But one reason I wanted to have Josh on, he covers Auburn, obviously, for the paper up there. And but I wanted to have him on because he wrote a piece this week, I took note of it because I've been saying the same thing about the incredible number of fouls in the SEC, so much more than the other conferences. But as he points out, and I think this is something that gets lost on the average fan, there's no such thing as SEC refs. I mean, they could be. Yeah. You could see. Joe Lindsay at the Florida game one day and the FSU game the next day.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like football, every conference has their own referees, but basketball, they don't do that because, I mean, I don't think they can just from a money perspective. It would be either the referees have to take a pay cut or the conferences have to pay more money, which neither one's going to do. I did the story after watching Auburn and Kentucky on Saturday, and the three officials who reffed that game, they didn't ref together the last time they were out there, and one of them was in the Big Ten, one of them was in the AAC, and one of them was in the SEC. So, yeah, it's not SEC refs, but it is. That's what makes it weirder, that the fact that there are so many more foul calls in the SEC.
Yeah, and there's no – the only explanation is that it's more physical in the SEC, but I watch games from every other conference. I see the same kind of ball being played. What I see more in the SEC, and I don't know why, I can't explain it, are touch fouls, you know, out in the perimeter getting called.
Yeah, and I get there are certain things like that referees are supposed to say, well, that's a foul if you – you know, certain they've kind of, you know, put in the cylinder and all those things recently. But my feeling is, and again, I'm not a referee, I'm just a reporter observing this, but I feel like as a referee crew, you should go into a game and not say, well, this would be a foul in a different game and not a foul in this one, but kind of adjust to what the game you're watching. If the teams are going to play a more physical brand of basketball, I don't feel like you need to call 20 more fouls in the game. Just... If a guy gets hacked going to the basket, it's a foul. But if a guy brushes another guy's shoulder going for a rebound, maybe that's not a whistle.
Yeah, we had a game. I think it was that I was covering the other day. I want to say it was Florida LSU. It might have been another game here in the O'Connell Center. And I think all of us were tweeting out. Obviously, the officials thought they were the show tonight because nobody wanted to come and see the basketball teams play because they were calling so many fouls. But here's where I get into a real problem. I understand freedom of movement. That you know, Jay Billis says it's dead again. That they've killed it by not calling enough fouls. At the same time, we've moved the 3-point line back in college basketball, so guys are missing more 3-pointers than ever before. Why is somebody not trying to make the game more entertaining? You know, the game, it almost feels like they're trying to make it less fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, if people want to disagree with me, they can, but I like when basketball teams get to run up and down the court and play basketball.
Right.
To me, that's what's fun. And you watch an SEC game, and they run up and down the court, and there's a whistle every time they do. And, I mean, that Auburn-Kentucky game, there was one stretch where Kentucky went 7.5 minutes without making a shot from the floor. And I'm looking at it, I'm seeing it on stat broadcast, I'm like, wow, that's incredible. That's a long time without making a shot. And I wanted to see how many they had missed. They missed 3. In 7.5 minutes, they took 3 field goals because they went to the free throw line every single time down the court. And you can say, yeah, Auburn needs to defend without fouling or, you know, fouls get called. And that's true, but there's got to be a medium somewhere that just says this can't be. You can't watch a game where there are 7 minutes of 3 field goal attempts. Be like, yep, we're putting the best product on the floor. Something has to change there.
What do you think the explanation is for the SEC getting called for so many more fouls? Because it's a huge number. I mean, it was obviously in your story, and you can read that online as well. But what do you have an explanation? I don't know the answer.
I don't either. I did interact on Twitter. Let me make sure I get his name right. Hold on one second. Sorry.
What's up?
John W. Adams. He was the former NCAA coordinator official.
Sure,
he saw my story on Twitter and kind of reached out. He said one thing that he thinks it could be is that while there are no conference officials, each conference has a you know, coordinator of officials. So if a referee works for the Big Ten, works for the SEC, works for the AAC, he works for 3 different conferences, but he's getting direction from 3 different coordinators of officials. So I don't know if the SEC is saying, call it tight. I don't know what it is, and I don't know how to fix it. John Adams said he would love to see a coordinator of officials be a national person, be one coordinator of officials for the NCAA, not for each conference. But he said that was pitched in 2014 and very quickly shut down because the conferences didn't want that. I don't know what the answer is, but to me, the amount of fouls we're seeing in SEC games and how much more that is compared to other conferences is not just a coincidence. I mean, it's the Big Ten and the SEC have the same number of teams, and both play a physical brand of basketball, and the SEC as of Sunday had 1,300 more fouls called in games. That's not a coincidence.
Well, that almost tells you it has to be coming from somebody. You know, that somebody is saying, hey, look, we want to get freedom of movement back in the game. It seems to be leaving in some of these other conferences. I would think, though, like, for example, when Florida and Kentucky play on Saturday, if I was that guy, the head of officials, I would go to that student, let him play. Let him play. Let's just watch the game. It'll all even out in the end.
Yeah. Like, you have to call fouls. And you can't – it's part of basketball. And, if a guy goes to the basket – and gets raked across the arms, it's a foul. So on the free throw line, but there's got to be a way that you don't have to call every single thing. I mean, there was one foul in the Auburn-Kentucky game where Anthony McLemore, Auburn center, just standing still, jumped for a rebound and caught it, but his arm, like, brushed another guy, and he got called for a rebounding foul. And that's the weirdest one. The amount of rebounding fouls we've seen in the SEC this year seems ridiculous. Like, it's a contact sport. Basketball is a contact sport. Guys get hit. Guys make contact with each other while they're going up for a basketball. You can't call it every single time down the court. There shouldn't be games where there are 46, 52 fouls called in a game. That's not fun to watch. That's not a good product that the SEC is putting on the floor.
You know, and the one thing is they're looking at four teams getting in the tournament right now, and maybe those two things aren't exclusive of each other. So that may be something that they have to look at. Hey, one thing quick on the Auburn basketball team. It's been kind of an up-and-down year for them. They've had some great wins at home, but on the road, not so much. It's kind of hard to invest a lot if you're filling out a bracket in Auburn, even though as a 5 seed in the SEC tournament, they won the tournament and then went on, obviously, to the Final Four.
Yeah, it's a tough team to read because there are games where you watch them and you can see, like, this could be a Final Four team. And then there are games where you watch them and think, yeah, this team could very easily lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament just because it depends on the night. It depends on sometimes the three-point shots fall. Sometimes they very much don't fall. Sometimes they hit free throws. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes the defense can really slow down an opponent. Sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, last year's team was in a way similar because it also struggled on the road and played really well at home. And then, you know, postseason neutral site, it got hot. This year's team, you can see it doing the same thing. You can kind of talk yourself into saying, hey, their neutral site's not a true road game. It could get hot, but it is really hard to predict because this team has been uneven away from home, and the NCAA tournament, SEC tournament, will not be at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Quickly before we let you go, Auburn spring practice, like everybody else, is getting ready to start soon. What's the excitement level like? I mean, obviously coming off the season they had.
I think it's pretty high, especially with Chad Morris coming in as offensive coordinator. Auburn fans have been burned before, but I think the belief is that Chad will really help Gus kind of change and bring the offense to a new level, which is what fans have been asking for some time. The big question really is just how will Auburn put together an offensive line after losing four starters from a group that really wasn't even that good last year. So there is some excitement about what things could look like, but there are also a lot of questions in some important positions. So it'll be an interesting one to watch.
He is Josh Vitale from the Montgomery Advertiser, covers University of Auburn. We appreciate his time. We'll take a break and come back with more here on the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com. Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or visit Zaxby's.com. Okay, thanks to Josh, and I think next week we might have Mark Weiss finally able to get on. It's going to depend on his travel schedule as well, but anyway, we'll continue to talk a lot about Gator basketball, and we'll kind of give you what we think about the SEC tournament. Here's the thing I think about the SEC tournament. Before last night, I would say Kentucky's going to win that thing it's not even going to be close. Now they go and lose on senior night. blow a 17-point lead, maybe it's wide open. But that here's the thing. Who do you trust? Like, if you were going to, if you said, I've got to pick a team besides Kentucky to win the SEC tournament, and I'm not allowed to pick Kentucky, who would you pick? I don't know. I don't know who the heck I'd pick. You know, I don't like the way LSU's playing. Again, I don't think he's done a very good job this year. And that goes to another thing I wanted to talk about, which is there is no doubt who your coach of the year is, right? John Calipari. Even after that loss last night, they won the conference again. And he tends to get overlooked, kind of like the way Billy used to get overlooked. But the problem is, who else would you take? Will Wade? No. First of all, you're not voting for a guy involved in the whole FBI thing. It's why Bill Self won't get coach of the year nationally. And rightfully so. He won't. He probably deserves it, he or Scott Drew, but he won't get it because of the whole FBI scandal. So Will Wade, no. Bruce Pearl, can't win away from home. Mike White, no, I don't think anybody's voting for him. Frank Martin, you lost to Stetson, okay, at home. They're 300-something. I love Donnie Jones, but they're 300-something. In the net ranking. So, I mean, I don't know. How good a – that's the thing. How good a coach are you if you lose games like that? When and you end up not getting in the tournament because of who you played and how badly you played against them in the non-conference. So, yeah, in the conference, they've been pretty good. They've surprised a lot of people. Is that coach of the year? No, I don't think there's any question that it's Calipari. I don't think there is. And, you know, it's, I'm sure they'll all enjoy it. And they'll enjoy getting that trophy. It's about a 10-second celebration. You literally, it's before your first game in the tournament, and they bring you out, your team out, and they stop right before the first game, and they have the trophy, and Greg Sankey gives it to the John Calipari, and everybody applauds, and all the Kentucky fans are going to go nuts. And then it's over. Now you got to play a basketball game. So it doesn't last that long. I did want to talk about block charge real quickly. I know this is going long again, but I've had this feeling about the block charge call for a couple of years. And I heard somebody bring it up on a talk show, just a caller, and they shot him down right away. But I believe block charge should be eliminated. It is obviously – it's a very difficult call to make, and I don't know how many times they get it right. I would say it's no more than 60% of the time. But to me, you say, well, how can you eliminate it? You can't just have guys running over people. Yeah, that's a charge. It's a charge if you run over somebody. But no more should you be allowed to set up, plant your feet, and try to take a charge. That should come under the flopping rule. And if we can eliminate that so guys don't defend that way anymore, I think maybe some of these fouls could get out of the game. You would just have to let guys go to the basket. Okay, look, I got my hands in the air. I tried to do everything I could, but I didn't just stand there and become a statue and grab my private areas so you wouldn't kick them and take a charge. Now, there's an art to it. There's no doubt about it. It's the rule, so guys who do it, you give them credit. But I think they get it wrong so often. It's very hard to call. I think it could be eliminated. Now, tell me I'm crazy. Go ahead. I'll be here all day. No, I won't, because I have to do three things and get out of here. Let's do three things.
It's time for three things.
Number one, it's not just hard to be a Knicks fan. It's embarrassing to be a Knicks fan. No matter how much they lose, no matter how much, they always find a way to make it worse. And that's because James Dolan, you know. And I don't care about the Knicks. I couldn't tell you what their record was if you put a gun to my head. But I do know this, that they threw Charles Oakley out of there, and that was an embarrassing situation. And now Spike Lee is done with the Knicks. And I'm sure all of you read the story and heard about him going on about getting kicked out. And it was – they basically wanted him to leave the arena and go through a different entrance. And he knows, he's smart, that he couldn't get back in. You can't scan a ticket twice, so he wouldn't leave. Man, being a Knicks fan has got to be brutal. Now, it was great in the 70s. Willis Reed came on the court. Yeah, that was great. Now, I can't imagine. Like, I got caught up in Lin's sanity. And Jeremy Lin was having his run. It was amazing. And I was actually a little bit of a Knicks fan for a while. Man, it's bad. That is an ugly situation. That's one of the big stories of this week. Another big story is the whole Tom Brady thing. Number two is the Tom Brady story, which is going to be really interesting because I'm hearing more and more people who know more than I do about the NFL, obviously, which is like everybody. I like the NFL. Don't get me wrong. I love the NFL. But I don't know as much about the inside workings of it as many of these insiders. And most of them are saying, hey, Brady's probably not going to be in New England. And it's just amazing to think about the best player of all time, if you believe that. I happen to subscribe to that theory. Not being in New England, but being not only that, but being like if Tom Brady retired, okay, now we'll see the changing of the guard and who are they going to. No, well, he's playing against you. If he goes to Tennessee, somewhere else, I mean, it would be a tough call, but there would be a part of me that would have the thought as a franchise owner and as a GM go, dude, we are going to sell tickets with Tom Brady. We are going to be on TV more than we normally would be. Let's look. I don't know if it's going to work. I think it might. He's the best player of all time. He's still a pretty good player. If we can put weapons around him, if I'm Tennessee, I got Derrick Henry. Hey, don't worry about it. It's 3rd and 3. You don't have to throw the ball. That will be fascinating. And it will be fascinating to see what the Patriots do. Do they take a leap of faith on like a Jameis Winston? Do they go get Ryan Tannehill then? What do they do? Teddy Bridgewater, you know, is going to be a fascinating where he ends up. So, like, I'm kind of like, I've always kind of liked the Patriots. I really respect Belichick as a coach. I know all the cheating stuff and everything, but that's okay. I know it's just I don't particularly care for it. I don't think it's anywhere like the Astros did or Bruce Pearl. But I've had a lot of respect for them, and because I kind of like Tom Brady. I like the way Tom Brady can make fun of himself. I like his appearance in Ted 2, all that stuff. But I'm rooting for him not to go back because it's going to make things so much more. Like if Brady re-signs with the Patriots, you're like, eh. Well, the NFC or AFC East is the same as it always has been. I want him to go somewhere, and I don't care where it is. That's going to be fun, and then I want to see who they replace him with. That's going to be amazing. Number three on the three things. This is a glorious time of the year because all the tournaments are starting around the country. They started actually yesterday with the A-Sun, the Big South, the Horizon, and the Patriot Leagues. Today, they start three more. I think the Mountain West is today, right? And the Ohio Valley, I believe it is. And then tomorrow, a bunch more start. So it's a good time. Now, I will say this. It's not great TV until there's 2 minutes left in the game because you really don't care who wins a game between certain teams. What you're hoping for is just a great finish or a team qualifies. And really, let's face it, guys, the last 3 or 4 minutes of the championship game is all you really want to watch. But still, they're on, and it's programming. And that's what's great for ESPN. They love having all these conference tournaments. It's programming. It's 12 o'clock in the afternoon or, you know, at noon. We got a game to put on instead of another replay of SportsCenter. Although I know they do them all live now, but it's still the same stories. So I'm excited about it. And, you know, I the women start tomorrow too, right? Florida's playing LSU, I believe, tomorrow. Or is it the next day? Anyway, they're playing them in the SEC tournament up in Greenville too. So good luck to them. They've had a better year than they had the year before, and that's progress. They're still nowhere near where they need to get. To be viable But they are what they are, and hopefully that happens. All right, that's going to do it for today's podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll be back with another one next week. Next week, we'll be doing it on Tuesday, and the following week, next week on Tuesday, because I'm going to the SEC tournament. The following week on Tuesday, because we have some other stuff we want to get done. We got a lot of stuff in the works. We're trying to do a lot of different things, and hopefully you guys are going to enjoy them all. I hope. All right, so here's my schedule. I've got baseball Friday, basketball Saturday, softball Sunday. That's the way I like it. I like to have a different sport every day. So if you see me out there, say hello. That's going to do it for me. I am Pat Dooley, sports columnist of the Gainesville Sun. I am deep, I am way back, and I am out of here. The Duly Noted Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today. And by Vistar Credit Union, with locations across Gator Country. Visit VistarCU.org. And the Humidor, going the distance for fine cigars.